Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Welcome everyone who is here and those who are listening from the podcast. This is A to D, Agree to Disagree talk show, and I want to welcome everybody. Good evening, everyone, and how is your week going for those who are listening, and how is your weekend going for those who are live? we have today a very controversial issue, socialism versus capitalism, left versus right, and we have a guest who is going to be taking us on the concept of socialism, why I'll be on the capitalist side. That makes me feel like a villain, but yeah, we have to do what we have to do. I can't hear you, Lewis.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I think you should hear me now.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, there's really no villain. There's really no villain, but
yeah. So we have really Lewis. No,
but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we have Lewis. Yeah, Lewis, just a bit of introduction to yourself, and then
hi guys,
going into the show. Yeah, Lewis, you can introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Lewis. I'm a data analyst. I'm also a tech enthusiast, as well as idealist. So what that means is I nitpick from the good aspects of socialism, and then we move from there.
Okay, so thank
is that
you
sufficient?
Yeah, I mean, that we'll get to know you more. We'll get to know you more in the show. So the first question I actually have for you, Lewis, regards to socialism and capitalism, and I mean, before I even ask the question, let me just say this, right? We hopefully would definitely leave here with knowledge, information about the opposite side. So we're not here to say, okay, you must accept my own ideology or whatever it is, but rather we're just here to educate to create an informative environment where everyone on the show can also get to see the both sides. So, what exactly do you mean, Lewis, that's my question, by you being a socialist idealist? Before we get into the definition of socialism.
Okay, so like you said, we are here to apparently rub minds and see every economic system has its own disadvantages. Every economic system, from the capitalist to the socialist to the communist system. So when I mean socialist idealist, it continues to evolve. Socialism as you see it, it is not the socialism you saw during Lenin's period or during the dark ages of the Soviet Union. Okay. It is more of picking the good parts and seeing how you can integrate it into a free and fair society that tends to cater for everyone, for those that are less privileged and weak, to those that are powerful and strong. It is a way to, you know what, cater for every single person. So when I say socialism idealist, I'm going to remove some of the weird aspects we see in socialism regarding the whole government monopolism on the people, and more towards the people having power to dictate for themselves. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so to you, right? I mean, so for me, this is what socialism is. It is a system where wealth is being distributed among the people, right? So can you just give us a very clear-cut distinction between socialism and communism, because most of the time we get to see that this is happening Interchange.
Yeah. You get to label socialism as just as communism, but to be fair, socialism is, on the simplest terms, just very, very simple, falls in between capitalism and communism. People have a right to own their own properties, yeah, as well as the government owning the natural distribution, petroleum, for instance, and so on. The government owns this healthcare and so on. Comes to now wealth, people in a socialist system own it. So that's the difference between the communist system and the socialist system, yeah? In the communist system, the government takes everything from people and you believe the property is owned by the state. Every single property, the t-shirt I'm wearing now is owned by the state, yeah? But when you look at socialism, it's simply saying that, you know what, I can own it too. I need to give back to the natural distribution system so that those that don't have the opportunity that I have would be paid. It's a very simple term. So it's in between communism and capitalism. Yeah, you can see maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, let's just say 5 in between. It drags from here, it drags from there to make something up.
Okay, so but this is something that I see, right? So when people talk about socialism, right, and they tend to bring out this utopia system of, oh, well, distribution, we would care for everyone. But there are very important details that many socialist advocates somehow do not see, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, you see, first, you notice that in socialism, right, people do not really care about wealth creation. Because I don't know if the quote by Karl Marx or a definition of socialism is saying, give to the government and the government will give you according to your needs, right? Which means everybody's going to be given. The government will give you according to how much you have given. So I think either that's for socialism or communism, and maybe I'm mixing them up. And communism, is give to the government and the government will give you according to your needs, right? But the question is this. When you look at the policies that socialism brings, or the entire... So for people who may need questions, who wants to ask questions, I'm seeing some raise of your hands. You can just put it in the chat box. You're not allowed to mute your mic. I'm sorry for that. So back to my point. So you see the policies under socialism, right? Where you see things like minimum wage, right? Yeah. Now, I want to point out one thing. Minimum wage, the increment of minimum wage has adverse effects on employment. Now, I'll give you this is statistics done by Thomas Sowell, this is statistics done by economics. You will see that when you have a department, you own a company, you have a department where you pay each and every one of your team member, let's say you pay them equally, you spend 100,000 naira based on salary on that department. You have 5 people, you're paying them 20,000 naira each. And now the government, 20,000 naira being the minimum wage, right? The government comes up with something. Yeah. You know what? Minimum wage, we increase minimum wage to 25,000, or we increase minimum wage to 30,000, or we increase to 30,000. Let's go 30,000, right? Now, everybody in that department is supposed to earn at least 30,000 naira, right? Now, which means that instead of you paying the normal 100,000 naira you're paying, which is 20,000 naira for each person, you end up paying 120,000 naira, which is 30,000 naira for, you end up paying 150,000 naira, which is 30,000 naira for each person. Now, if you want to come and do your own financial analysis and try to come up with a better profit and loss margin, you say, you know what? I don't think, maybe I don't need 5 people in my team. I need to reduce costs. I need to maximize profit, right? And then you reduce the amount of people working in your firm to 3, making it 90,000, right? You realize that the 2 people you laid off would prefer earning that 20,000 naira than having no job at all. Do you get?
And okay, so,
You can. I mean, you can give your counterpoint.
So when I've seen this argument before concerning the financial aspect of socialism. Technically, for socialism,
I think I'm losing you. I'm losing you, Lewis. I'm losing you. I can barely hear you.
I would say, in my opinion, redistribution of wealth. That might. You should hear me.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I think you can just turn off your video if you have if you don't have enough bandwidth. You can just turn off your video and your voice will do.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So you should be able to hear me.
Yeah.
So one of the main misconceptions of socialism is the financial aspects, where the government would have to distribute like financial incentives. But technically,
I don't know why.
That's really it. What the government is held about. Can you hear me?
Yeah, continue.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So number one. Oh, okay. That's fine. So number one thing the government actually distributes, like we can see, is really important is healthcare. The government redistributes healthcare. And so on. So when you look at healthcare, the tax in, let's say in Canada and Switzerland, it's always like healthcare and basic people that cannot afford the basic necessities. That is where it's going to. Yeah. Like I said, it is the duty of the state or the duty of society to actually cater for those that cannot cater for themselves. And yes, I've heard these arguments where people say, okay, yeah, why are they, why can those people work and make money? But the truth is, if you want to be realistic, there are many people that work, let me just see, that earn way less than $1 a day. There are many people. And so when you're talking about socialism actually provides the basic amenities like free healthcare. And I believe education as well should to be free. Like in Finland, for instance, you're seeing that education is free and they have 100% literacy rate. So that is what, that's what I'm talking. Yeah, like look at this socialist economy. It's not all about giving money. It's giving the basic amenities to people. Yeah, it's giving healthcare. It's giving bringing down the prices of food, subsidizing for the society, and giving free education systems. So when everyone give 30,000 naira and then they might actually be earning less, but that is practically not the case because the money is going into different forms that help the society.
Yeah. So thank you on that. I may have some other counterpoints to what you said, but let me go to the one thing you pointed out, which is healthcare. And I think on the concept of socialism, if there is on all the variables and all the planes of socialism, one thing that one disparity that I find with socialism is the healthcare system. And I'll say the global healthcare system in Canada and in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just so my audience know and so that people are aware, in Canada, for you to have which they operate a global healthcare system. In a sense that they're not a socialist state, but they operate a global healthcare system, which is under socialism. Same thing with Norway. Now, you realize, for you to have a surgery appointment in Canada, you have to wait 57 days. In Norway, for you to have a surgical appointment, you have to wait for No, in Canada, you have to wait for 10 weeks. In Norway, you have to wait for 57 days. So you, suddenly, someone figures out there is cancer growing up, cancer cells growing up in his or her body, or has a need for a transplant. And he has to book an appointment 57 days for Norway, or 10 weeks. In America, it is 18 days. The average is 18 days. Maximum is 24 days.
Okay.
Right? And when you think about, when you think about the global healthcare system, and I agree that global healthcare system is something that society, healthcare system is something that society needs. I mean, this is something that it should be given to the society, right? But what we need to understand is, if you're going to give the global healthcare system, which is okay, I think you should, there should be room for private healthcare, because what you tend to forget is people in the society are not in the same biological immune, are not, I do not have the same biological immune or biological, like call it biological terms or biological level. There are people that tend to fall sick more.
The immunity levels.
Yeah, immunity levels.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't say immunity levels, but immunity levels, just let's use immunity levels, right? That is the same immunity. Yeah. For example, well, we're in Nigeria, like our healthcare system is is not the best. How many times have you been to the hospital? How many times have I been to the hospital? Yeah, you get. So, but the thing is, the amount of times, if the government is talking about healthcare in Nigeria, I may not take it seriously. But guess what? When I'm 57, when I'm 57, when I'm 70, when I'm 75,
take it seriously.
I have to take it seriously. In Canada, where they have the global healthcare system, do you realize last year in Canada, 33,000 Canadians had to leave Canada for medical treatment? 33,000 people. Because it's between, I have to wait for 10 weeks and stand a high chance of dying, or just cross the border to New York or Washington State in America and get a quicker healthcare system. So this is one thing, and I agree with you based on distribution and distributing the world and taxing people. It is good. But the thing is, what I have seen in capitalism is this, right? And I haven't made my state on capitalism. I think you should just give me the due diligence to just do that, right? Capitalism, for me,
Can I address your point on the whole healthcare system issue? So now you might say, okay, people are waiting. Is it 10 weeks for that? Yeah. But you know, there are people in US that die every single day because they do not have access to healthcare. So you might give the semantics for. Time or whatnot. If I have the money, why don't I just pay and have it done? But to be very honest, a lot of people die every single day because they cannot pay for it, and they do not have access to it, and they
I'm kind of struggling to hear.
For it.
I'm kind of struggling to hear. Can you just restate what you're saying?
I'm talking about can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah. So like I said, there are people in US do any form of health care. There are people that don't have access to it. They don't. You also remember that they don't have to wait.
I wasn't able to catch all you said, but what I believe you're saying is that there are more people who die in the US because they don't have access to healthcare than people in Canada or in other states, right? And just so that I put it to you, right? In every policy and in every aspect of government, extremity is not good.
Definitely.
Right? So in every
aspect, I agree with you.
Extremity is not good. So in as much as I'm telling you, yes, capitalism, I understand, and I am not oblivious to the fact that extremity in capitalism is bad. right? But the thing yeah. is this, when you begin to talk about government controlled welfare, education, what you're doing is you're giving the entire system, the entirety of the system, to a group of people who maybe are competent to manage such and maybe are competent to manage such resources. And you need to understand this. In every system, if you look at, yes, I agree with you on Finland. You know about Finland having a good educational system, which is okay. Which is something that I commend Finland for, right? And America hasn't done so well because their
loan is ridiculous.
Their loan is ridiculous.
In America, the most ridiculous thing.
It's ridiculous, right? And it's something I agree with you on it, right? But what one thing that I would point out to every single aspect of socialism and capitalism is when you are in a capitalist system where the educational system is ridiculous, you have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have a choice. You have a choice to, you know what, I go to a private university, or you know what, I go to an university that I do homeschooling. I mean, if it's something you can do, right? But when you come to a socialist state where everything is being controlled by the government, and just getting into having a government that doesn't really care for such, do not really have care for such what's the word, for such aspects of life. For example, I'll give an example.
Mm-hmm.
When you have, well, this is not socialism, this is communism, right? In Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, or you have North Korea is also communist, where the government.
I don't think so. I won't categorize North Korea as communist. I'll categorize them as a military state.
Actually, they're actually military states, right? But when I did my research on them, they placed them under communism. But bad example.
Yeah, but it's military. Yeah,
but it's not. So if you look at China and look at Vietnam, which Vietnam is not a very good state, so let me not even go with Vietnam. I'll go with China. If you see the amount of people that leave China is a communist state. You see the amount of people that leave China. China has been able to develop itself. I mean, look at their miracle, right?
Yeah.
But the question, the impending question, and Chinese.
China switched to socialist just to.
Yeah. They really? Have
China but, is so much socialist.
But
yeah.
can we say China has switched to socialist?
I'll agree with them. Yeah, based on the way they have redesigned their economic system.
They control. I'll call it
socialist investing.
They control everything.
So like I said, they invest in private, and as you can see in China now, we have one of the fastest growing number of millionaires now. Yeah, America still retains that title, yeah.
Yeah.
But in China now, you can still see that they have the, because what they do now is actually invest in their own companies and hold shares and, you know, still pump money. But I would categorize them now as socialist more rather than communist.
Well, I will agree with you, because when I was doing my research in 2017, I think 2018, China made billionaire every 4 days. In 2017.
They exactly. Made it, that's my point. Yeah.
So I was wondering, but the thing is, when I look at the amount of information they are trying to during this whole COVID period, where you're getting a lot of people leaving China, people coming out to whistleblow against them, and you know, so I'm like, I know it's socialist. I know it's more like socialist, but it seems.
I understand your point on holding speech or
reading. Well, yeah, do you get? So I'm like, this sounds.
Yeah, your point,
to me, this seems to me more like a communist state. But if you look at the entire thing, right? You figure that even in America, which is purely capitalist, you see people moving between the class. You get people moving between the class faster than you get people moving in China.
Yeah.
You in China, so it shows you that privately owned businesses or privately owned infrastructure does better. Now that doesn't mean that, because one problem I've had, right, when I talk about capitalism is, oh, you know how the employers always want to step on the employees. You know, it is how this is the same thing that happened with masters and slaves. Someone gave the narrative that it's the same thing, cheap labor and all. And I'm like, that may seem like a very good point. But one thing we always need to understand is this, right? You would need a certain level of foundation to grow.
True.
You need a certain level. So it is not going, if you talk about socialism and people are like, okay, you know what? I'm not even going to work, or I'm not even going to strive to be the best of who I am because there's no competition. Uh-huh. This is the same thing that happened in the black community when they started doing what they call the unemployment incentive. Oh, if you're unemployed, we start giving you, you get unemployment benefits.
Yeah.
And you notice that people became reluctant to go to work. I mean, this is the same thing that happened during this COVID period when the seniors were saying, should we give, how much COVID relief funds are we going to give America? That they are scared that if they begin to give the Americans a certain level of COVID relief funds, people will become reluctant to go back to work. But that is, for me, that sounds like a world distribution, right? But the thing is, I feel like this whole concept of world distribution can be done in ways where people still have, pretty much have control over the kind of school they want their children to go to, the kind of healthcare they want to have, the kind of businesses they want to run. I mean, that is it for me. But let me just ask you one question that may that will help, right? Let me paint a socialist system. You go to, I'm not saying you gamble, but you go to a casino, and you're able to hit through the odds. I mean, you gamble the odds were in your favor, and you made quite a good amount of money. And you're about to leave the casino, and the manager comes and tells you, don't you think it's a good idea that we share how much money you have made among people? I mean, including people that lost money. What is going to be a response to that?
So firstly, like, that interpretation is towards the communists. You're interpreting communism with the question, but regarding socialism, you are picking a percentage of the person's winnings and giving it and distributing it. Yeah. So if you look at your question, it might not really function in a socialist environment. Because obviously, yes, communism in the casino, you have to share it with everybody. In fact, you might not even classify it as winnings because you will not even know you won anything, technically. But regarding socialism, it's just a percentage of it that goes back. And in casinos as well, you remember you also pay a form of tax. But when you want to categorize the casinos as like in a socialist environment, it's just that you're going to pay more tax from it. That's really the difference. You understand?
Yeah, I get you. I get you on that. For me, so
I think you heard me clearly.
Yeah, I heard you clearly. I think one of the difficulties I have or I've been having lately is how to just draw the clean line between communism and socialism. I mean, it is something that I hope that I mean, because when I was in my study, I was like, where do we even draw this line? Where do you even draw this line? And in as much as I've asked you the question in the beginning, it's
can you hear me?
Yeah, can I hear? Are you saying something?
Okay.
So
I thought you couldn't hear me, so I wanted to make.
No, I could hear you. So someone is saying that communism isn't forcing distribution of income. This Victor guy seems to be very conversant with the topic. So the first thing he was saying, socialism isn't when the government does things, distribute things, or provide health care or welfare. Socialism simply puts when workers own the means of production. This discussion of government for the welfare or healthcare is simply a discussion on how to make capitalism more humane. So the vibe I'm getting from Victor is that he's more like he's a socialist person. right?
Let me read the message.
He's also said here that China is highly communist, which, I mean, you cleared me on that, and I still have difficulty believing because of what is going on during this COVID period, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
So socialism isn't collecting people's money. Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to come out collecting money and say...
I mean, it's
your income, but it is a different ballgame when I see that in Norway or in this Scandinavian country, people pay tax, over 60% tax. 60% tax. And I'm like...
Mm-hmm.
So if I earn $100,000 in a year,
yeah.
I get to keep $40,000 and the government goes with $60,000. That's all I say, well, that's true, but there's free education, there is free healthcare.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
how many times do I fall? I mean, I'm like,
someone is arguing every Scandinavian country is I disagree. I totally disagree with
that is totally false. For Scandinavian countries,
yeah,
they are pure socialist states, right? They are pure socialist states because it is the same thing that Joe Biden. I'm sorry, I don't put politics into this, but I have to. It's the same that Joe Biden wants to do in America, wants to increase taxes. See, it is. As long as you're paying 60% and there's free education, there's free healthcare, there's free everything, it turns towards the socialist side. So when I think about this thing, I'm not very sure on where this convention is going. Is this convention about superiority of capitalism over socialism? Or simply the effects of each. It's more like effects of each system. We're just trying to define each system and how best or what is best for every society.
Yeah.
So, Lewis, do you have a question for me as regards capitalism?
So there is this people factor capitalism as the system where people can rise up the ranks of. The system, where you can become a millionaire like this and stay there. So, my question revolves around what happens to those that cannot escape the lowest, like being poor. They can't escape it. What do you do with them? Remember, these guys can't in a capitalist system. They don't have access to healthcare. They don't have access to good schools. And so on and so forth. So how do you cater for these ones?
Okay. So the first thing I will tell you is this. Like I said, the extremity is bad, right? Whether you're talking about socialism capitalism, right? And one thing I always say is this. The government has a responsibility, has an obligation, right, to care for her citizens. Right.
Okay.
And
how
they administer this care is their responsibility. Nigeria says they operate a capitalist system, but for me it's more like a mixed system. I don't know, but we have seen countries
just to digress a little bit, the Nigerian system it revolves around the theory of anyhowness. They just move us.
We have seen socialist states do very well. We have seen capitalist states like America do very well. Now, for your question about what those people should do, I believe, again, like I said, that the government is responsible to take care of her citizens, right? And that is why, even in the capitalist states like America, taxes are civic obligations, right? And taxes must be paid. And the government must cater for their schools, which are the public schools, and the government must be able to administer a certain threshold or limit to health system, meaning there must be a standard. So before a healthcare system is being administered to society, there must be a standard that my health and care system must meet. I understand and I believe in that, right? And in a capitalist system also, they need to also look at people who, like you said, who do not have access to good education. Because think about it, in every society, socialist or capitalism, education is the way to climb up in power and in wealth, right? So for capitalist states, what I tell people about capitalism is something that is focused on the middle class, right? So capitalism is the joy of the middle class, because the middle class, it gives the middle class hope to climb, right? But for the people below, like in the inner cities, the government's focus should be to those people. The taxes that the people in the upper level pay must go to the people in the or should go to the people in the inner cities, which may sound like socialism. Like I said, the mix of the both systems is something I agree with. The mix of the both system is something that I feel that every system should adopt. So for those in the poor areas and for those in the very, very lower class who cannot escape it, the government must shine the light for them to get away from it. And how can the government do this? The first thing the government can do is to ensure that the unemployment rate in those areas are low. And how can the government ensure unemployment rate is low? Minimum wage. Minimum wage. And I will say this. In America, in the 1970s, the black people had the highest employment rate. And that was the time where minimum wage was at its lowest, right? And people have come to that the more you increase the minimum wage, the more unemployment rate increases. That's one. Now, two, for the healthcare system, like I said, for the healthcare system, there has to be a standard. The government has to provide for these people. We need to provide standardized healthcare systems for the lower for the lower class. Thirdly, which is something that I feel it is very much very important, is the family structure. The family structure. So what you figure out that whether it's a capitalist system or whether it's a socialist system, once there's a problem with the family structure, a lot of people do not even make it, even if it's a capitalist system. Like the example you see in the black community today, where 74% of the black homes in America are run without fathers, right? So you see a big disparity in a family system, right? So because of children and people, and when children are raised in families where there is a single parent, their ability to climb up that ladder or that triangle becomes very, very, very low, right? So the most important thing, again, is, I think this is actually one of the most important things, is the family structure. So the family structure is one of the most important things, and the government has to create policies that keep the family structure together. Right, and I want to dive into this family structure a little bit, if you permit me. So you see, in America, when they started incentivizing single mothers, where they started paying them for being single and paying them for being for having children with not having fathers in the home, it became more like a normal thing. People now looking at the government to provide funds, and statistics have already shown that a child raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor. 20 times more likely to go to jail, 7 times more likely to drop out from school. So the family structure is another very important thing. So the educational system, the employment, healthcare, and family structure are ways that people can leave the poor, the lower class to the higher class. And let me just wrap this up with family structure. Nigeria is bad.
Okay.
Nigeria is bad.
True.
The economic system in Nigeria is bad. But I can assure you, Louis, the only reason why Nigeria hasn't gone into the dogs is because of our family structure.
Okay.
I'll tell you.
Okay.
The only reason why Nigeria as a country is still kind of firm around economic and social things is because of the family structure. Nigeria has a very strong family structure. So I think because of the family structure in Nigeria, so your father went to a school, I can say that many people went to better schools than their dad.
True.
Yeah. Many people went to better schools than many of us went to better schools than our fathers. And so the thing is, our fathers have gone through school, they have seen, and so they hope for better things. So your father struggles, mm-hmm. and so because of that, you can see that there is a bit of wealth transfer in form of knowledge, in form of exposure.
Yeah.
You get so that is that. I mean, that is my own take on your question. Let's have more things, more questions to ask me.
Okay. So like I'm just reading the comments, and someone was asking why socialism is a taboo. I don't really think it's a taboo because I think now it's question. Being discussed.
I won't agree that
it's a taboo. I think it's the last.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think it's really taboo. I think what people had against socialism was because it was mistaken for a refined form of communism, yeah? And they looked at the fall of Cuba, fall of North Korea, which in my own terms, I believe is a military state, not even involved in communism, Vietnam and the likes. But I think now people's eyes are beginning to open to the fact that socialism actually embraces equality. It identifies with equality. It tries to. I think one of the basic points that I earlier read on socialism was that in order to be truly socialist, everyone has to be treated as equal, and which is something that holds some certain form of value. And I asked that question earlier because I've heard the when I have this discussion with people, they say, okay, fine. Capitalism, obviously, which is true, helps you climb the social, let me just call it caste, the social caste and so on. But and my point always is like out of 100 people, yeah, you would still have a few elites, 3% of them climbing that ladder, then the rest forgot. And yes, you had a value, you gave perfect solutions to them, talking about the family system, which I think in US is broken. I don't see it getting. I read the article you're referring to, and it made some certain sense. They pitched it with the Jewish community, the African community, the Nigerian community, the white new community, and so on. And then they saw the disparities in how people got out of where they were stuck, and they found that Jews and the Chinese and the Africans obviously held more ground and had more privilege in getting, in overcoming the boundaries, which your point made sense. But one thing that capitalism does, which I've seen in America so far, it's that lobbying effect, yeah? Where you see people like NRA and oil companies, and we see this massive military contractors, they lobby the government for certain things. And what happens when you lobby the government is that, yes, you get much funds that would necessarily be needed to go into other places or cater for these people. And then when it comes to education, when it comes to healthcare, like I said earlier, I've noticed so far that I was even looking at, I was watching a docuseries on the difference between the NHS in London and the American healthcare system. And these guys were, when they interviewed them at first, they were thinking the NHS was giving them ridiculous amounts, or they were paying ridiculous amounts for maybe ordinary illnesses, till they saw the bill for an inhaler. Someone that, you get what I'm saying? Someone that needs like an inhaler that is asthmatic, and you're seeing the bill for this. So I think one of the reasons and one of my major switches to a more socialist approach was seeing the exploitation of these certain systems that are the basis of any state, which is healthcare, education. We've seen what is happening in the educational system. Yeah. We've seen the exploitation going on in the educational system, and we've seen the exploitation going on in the healthcare system. And those are one of the strongest switches I had when I thought about the socialist system and how you corrected those defaults.
Yeah, so thank you, Louis. I mean, you said a whole lot of things. and then I'll answer your questions and I'll just clear it up. But let me just say, one of the reasons why I think socialism is seen as a taboo, it's not being seen as a taboo, but the reason why, in America is this. Most of the, I think I need to be careful with my words here. Most of the heinous acts that have happened in the world, has stemmed from a form of socialism, unchecked socialism. That's the word, right?
Yeah, I agree with you.
So when you see the Soviet Union, when you see the Nazi Socialist Party, that's the one. Mm-hmm. When you see the Vietnam War, the socialism there. When you see all this, you begin to see that they had a kind of they're socialist. This is socialism, and then they go unchecked, right? Mm-hmm. So when you see people like in Northern Vietnam, when you see people like Ho Chi Minh, who was a good was a very good leader of Vietnam until he got replaced by some very extraordinary hateful person who now in Vietnam was and all. Because when I did a study on that, at first I was like, surely it makes sense. But the thing is, when you have
it was actually praised till the next leader came and crushed it.
The thing is, when a socialist state is given to a bad guy, you begin to feel the turbulence in it. So that's why most of when people talk about socialism, the taboo there is because most of the things that have happened, or most of the inhumane things that have happened, came from socialism, right? So I think that is one of the reasons why they see that it's not like in itself it's bad. Now, another thing I want to talk about is you saying out of 100 people, how many people make it out of class? What we realized from my study is this: if you have 100 set of people, if one person, it is hardly does ever happen that in a society when someone becomes a billionaire, because he or she doesn't take some certain level of people with him or her, right? Mm-hmm. So nobody becomes rich without making other people rich. So, Jeff Bezos that went through his wealth. Do you know how many people he made rich by having Amazon, right?
Yeah.
So the thing now is, it now boils down to your knowledge of investment, which goes down to education, right? So it's hardly will you see somebody being get rich without actually having other people, without actually making other people rich. For example, look at Russia. Before Putin, I'm not a Putin fan, but before Putin came into Russia, they were not billionaires.
I'm a huge Putin fan, by the way, but
Russia wasn't there, right? And Putin comes in and poof, you see people, billionaires, you see. So exactly my point, right? So I'm not that just to clear you on, just to clear the whole statement about 100 people in a particular society, only one person makes it. That is one. And that doesn't mean that this is not against, say, to my government helping people in other in the lower class that cannot escape. Now, the second thing I want to also say is about the scenario you gave about the inhaler. The funny thing about capitalism, and I think I saw this thing during the time of Rockefeller, the Carnegies, and the man that I truly love, JP Morgan.
Okay.
You realize that when a capitalist business, a capitalist decides to sell a particular product for a very high price to make high profit, people want to go and buy the product, right? Then somebody else now figures out that, no, I can sell this same product at a lower price. And he brings out the same product and puts, because capitalism gives you the choice to put price tags on your goods and services without it being checked, right? So the guy goes and brings out the same product and shows it to you at a lower price. What happens? The market gravitates towards that person. So in as much as we may think that in capitalism, there are no checks and balance, or using the word checks and balance, it is highly the truth, right?
Yeah.
So this guy said Jeff Bezos made nobody rich. that is a total lie. let me just start by saying that is a total lie. I have a friend of mine that works at Amazon, and that is a total lie. But I would address the question. So you figure out that, for example, using Amazon like an example, Amazon figured out that there is power in numbers. So if I sell this particular product and make 1 cent or $1, and people go to buy this product in millions, I'm more likely to make more money than if I sell this same product with maybe a $10 or $200 or a $20 margin. Do you get? This is the same thing that happened during the time of Rockefeller, when during the oil time, during the oil boom in America, when people were selling oil for ridiculous prices, people like Vanderbilt. Rockefeller put down his price down. And when he put his price down, when he reduced his price, the market gravitated towards him. So you begin to figure out that there are checks and balances. That's what AliExpress is doing so well. Do you understand? So people cannot just come and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to sell this product for this price. If you want to sell this product for this price, another person is saying, I mean, I'll sell it for a cheaper price. I may make $1 from it. I may make $2 from it, but this is the price I'm going to sell it at.
Yeah.
So again, yeah, those checks and balances. So
just to address that point, you're correct regarding market fluctuations and the rest.
Yeah.
But look at what I want us to look at is the healthcare system and the education system. Regardless of that, the prices never fall. It's always on the high side.
See, that is one
always
problem I have with, I don't know why the American system and that high education.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it is a defect. It's one of the biggest problems in the American system. I must tell you. It's one of the biggest problems in the American system.
Like you said, Jeff Bezos might have carried people and people might have invested. What of those that don't have the educational background to have invested? They lose out.
See, let me say this, right? Let me say this. And I will say this. I want to answer this question with this question Victor is asking.
Okay, yeah.
Victor said, Jeff Bezos made nobody rich. That's first, not true. He stole the value of his workers, created through their labor. That is how he made his billions. Whosoever got rich, Amazon was like any themselves. See, it is a total lie. First, now, just so you know, right? When Jeff Bezos started looking for, first, he got a loan from his parents. When Jeff Bezos started looking for funding, he told people to invest. He literally went to people to say, please invest. I think his parents invested either $15,000 or $1,500, I can't remember, but I know he's a 1.5. During that time, when he was looking for money, and now his both parents are worth $30 billion. Both parents of Jeff Bezos, that's worth $200 billion. It's the same Jeff Bezos, his parents are worth $30 billion. The same people, he went asking for funds, asking for investment, and he made me rich. Now you may say, well, Jeff Bezos stole money. Now, just so we also know, Jeff Bezos' annual income in Amazon is $80,000. $80,000. Now, the rest of his money comes from 18% of, definitely he owns 80%, he owns 18% of Amazon shares and all. But you cannot say that Jeff Bezos did not make, what's the word now? Who am I going to call now? It's just like saying Apple did not make anybody rich. Just like saying Microsoft did not make anybody rich. No. So, Jeff Bezos has been having buzz booze with the whole workers and people have been
with
him because of, you know, Amazon Flex, these people that do delivery. Like I said, the point of capitalism and socialism, there is a merge when they get to the extreme points. And it is something that we all should be scared about. Now, you asked a question concerning, can you just restate your question again? So I'm sure I'm asking the right thing.
I'm not sure. I can't remember my question.
Okay, so the question you're asking is how, as regards to the people in Amazon who don't earn as much or something. If I'm right, but
okay. I remember. So I was referring to investments here. Yeah. Those that invested in Amazon. Obviously, before you can invest in Amazon, you need money to invest in Amazon.
Yeah.
Meaning, obviously, they were middle class or higher class here.
Yeah.
Now, those that were the poor class.
Yeah.
Yes. Then, obviously, they are still stuck in their world.
Yeah. So.
Because they don't get out of that class.
So, yeah. So, good point. But like I said, and to my point again, mm-hmm. Luis, education, yeah. family system yeah. education is important. Now, let me say this yeah. about investment sure. so that we are clear on this thing. In America or in the capitalist states, you have a house. Because the Great Depression, the recession, one of the greatest recession that happened in America was
mm-hmm.
First started with the real estate. Yeah. First started with the real estate industry. Now,
yeah,
in America, you have $20,000, or maybe you have that's what they call the credit credit loans and all those financials, where yeah. a house is worth $1 million. You can drop $100K on it and own the house, and then pay mortgage till the house is yours.
Mortgage, yeah.
You know how much money you are able to have in household income. How much money you're going to have as in being able to own a house worth $1 million. So yes, people, the most important way to get out of poverty is education.
Yeah.
There is no in and out on it, right? So the people who are in those states and in those lower class need help from the government as regards to education. And sorry to also say this, right? Sometimes education. See, let your school not conflict with the education, because even the big schools do not even teach these financials. They don't even teach these financials. Do you get? So you see people who literally just took a step of faith. I mean, they don't even know what's happening. They're just okay, you know. There's a new company. In fact, I'll pay this amount of money. I'll give you an example: a cook in Google. When Google first started, you were supposed to pay him a particular amount. I think that's $30,000 a month, a year or something. Sorry, $10,000 a year or $40,000 a year. He said he was not going to collect half of his salary. And he's going to put his salary into Google as investment. My guy is rich. He's very, I think he's a billionaire. Same thing with a painter. A painter, one of the persons that painted the warehouse of Facebook, he didn't collect pay. He said he wanted to put it back into Facebook for investment. If he is a painter, definitely he didn't get a certain level of education. Maybe he did, but not in financials. But the guy is a millionaire because of that same line of thinking. So there is first things first. The first things first is family structure. Your father's, your parents must have made investment. I think Luis is out of here. You have to join back. Okay, I mean, so... he will want to join back, but I'll continue my statement, but you guys can ask your questions. So the first most important thing is back. I mean, I'm sorry I lost you for a minute. I mean,
you lost me. Yeah, I touched my AirPods and it disconnected, but that's fine.
So the most important, so that it all boils down again. The most important thing now is investment. An investment cannot be taught to you or cannot be a culture to you if it's not being passed down by your parents. Look at J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan had a father who was literally a banker. Family structure is important. And now, someone says, okay, well, does that mean that people who without fathers are lost? No. Then there's a space for mentorship. There's a space for mentorship. So the problem, the first thing is, this is the problem. You figure out this is the problem. This is my problem. So look at people like, okay, let me give an example. Tony Olumelu, the guy who owned was the chairman of the UBA group. The guy came up with a tutu from University of Lagos. they went for recruitment. I don't think they accepted him or something, but he wrote a letter to the then CEO telling him that. So I was saying, I was talking about Tony Elumelu, that that graduated from Unilag with 2-2, and I think they were recruiting, but he was doing his master. So he wrote a letter to the CEO of UBA then, the manager of CEO, the chairman of CEO then, saying that, see, he graduated with the 2-2. He knows that that's not a good thing. He knows that he doesn't have a standard chance, but he's doing his master's, in, I think, in business administration, MD or something, that the CEO should take a chance on him and all those stuff. So the CEO was like, you know what? I'll take a chance on this guy. The CEO took a chance on Tony Elumelu. And, I mean, you know who he is? I mean, he's a billionaire and all. So we cannot undermine family structure, mentorship, education, healthcare, and other social needs that the government should give. So, and if anyone have more questions, just please just put it in there.
I'm seeing Victor's question, and
do any of you believe that
he's going
to pay his employee less than the value they generate through labor?
Yes, I mean that is self-explanatory. I think it's exploit.
Choosing to pay his employee less than the value they generate. So let me.
I think it's exploitive.
Yeah, so but yeah. let me just this question has a lot of parts to it.
Okay.
So the parts to it is, are you saying that an employee, let me just use an example. A sales business, right? You sell a product and you make $1 from the product, or you make $1 profit, or the product makes $1 profit. So you sell, your boss buys a product for $10 and sells for $11, so which means
that
gives the company $1. Are you saying that the boss should be paying the employer should be paying the employee $1 for every product? Is that the question? If that's the question, you know that the business is going to go to ruin. That's the first thing. You cannot sustain a business like that, right? Because if you're going to talk about an employer paying his employee less than the value they generate, it means that Jeff Bezos shouldn't be earning $80,000, because Jeff Bezos definitely makes more money, generates more money than that. But I digress. So the way the question is structured in such a way that you can have two sides to it. So your question is: are you saying that for every single value a salesman in real estate sells a product, he sells a house and the house has, let's say, $30,000 profit in it, that the employer should pay the employee $30,000? Then what goes to the business? So this is where the concept of contract comes into play. So it is exploitive if you don't know the terms of the agreement, like slavery. I mean, slavery, they have a choice. It is what it is, right? They have a choice in slavery. But if you have a choice to say, well, I think I'll go with this, so I may not like it, it may not be the best, but I'll go with it. You sign the contract.
So I think, let me address his question for a bit here. I think where he's coming from, for instance, if you have someone building a house, for instance, like what do they call these guys these days? Is it estate developers, real estate developers? Yeah.
Right.
So when you look at how much they pay, probably the average guy carrying the blocks and cement every single day from and compared to the profits they actually make. Yeah. Yeah, these guys, they don't have a choice but to obviously agree to maybe 700 naira per hour or 1,000 naira. They don't have the choice. Why? Because of where they are stuck in. And so this real estate developer obviously has taken advantage of the fact that they do not have a choice to do this. Oh. And therefore, I'll give another example.
Louis, I get your example already, though.
Yeah.
So, honestly, it is exploitive, right? But the question, the question we need to always ask ourselves is this, right? The value that is being at your the scenario you gave, right, is one scenario where people do not even have, because there is a business, there is a business chain, right?
Yeah.
And as I'm talking to you right now, I'm an intern.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an intern in an oil firm, right?
Okay.
And I do IT security, cybersecurity jobs for them. And you know what that means,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I'm securing the organization from hackers and attackers, mm-hmm. right? Now I know the value. I see these things. When I go online, I check how much is IT analyst paid in America. I see the numbers, right? Mm-hmm.
And you also know your value.
I know my value. I know that what I'm being I know what I'm being paid is ridiculous to what my actual value is. So I know my value, right? So the question am I going to say, okay, you know what? I'm done. I know my value. You guys are not paying my value. You know what? I'm done. I'm going home. If I get home, my dad will slap me back to the office. Do you understand?
But that is the point where socialism aims to correct, yeah? The strong unionism, yeah?
Yes.
Where you can actually walk out of a company if they don't pay you.
But you can also do
something
that
if they try to exploit you.
See, you can do that in
But it's extremely hard.
In America, it's not.
It is hard. Look at the Nigerian system. Look at the Nigerian system, for instance.
Please, right? For capitalism, let's talk about Nigeria, right? See, but in America, if you think they're not being paid well, you can walk out. You can literally walk out. I'm telling you can walk. You can say, you know what, I'm done with this, and you go. You get, and you go.
Wait, let me just, he said socialism is about creating unions. Unions exist to fight. I'm saying there's a stronger union socialism because the people is stronger, not that they create unions.
I think what
union.
He's looking for is a democratized system. That's the word.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's
what... a democratized system where you can and people can always choose, because in the socialist state, I think people are able to choose who their CEO is, unlike just board of directors.
Yeah.
Who say, oh, we appoint this guy to be a CEO. But in a democratized system, all the employees can choose who the CEO is.
Yeah.
I mean, which is pretty much fine.
It's much more.
Yeah.
I think So just to explain further, socialism is something that a discussion that people need to have more often. I mean, in countries, in governments, what happens when people have these kind of discussions is that you tend to start thinking, like, for instance, we had this discussion, and from your standpoint, when I pointed out issues you had with capitalism, we already given some sort of not really a socialist value, but some sort of like points that we can use to correct it. And I think that's where this discussion aims to correct here, is that yes, there's no absolute economic system. You can't say, okay, this is a pure, I mean, we can see in the case of America, it is pure capitalist, but now we can see in Europe, people are having socialist ideas. They are nitpicking from the socialist system, and it's becoming a more refined environment. So I think that's where this discussion needs to be held more, so that you can be able to be aware of situations that people are going through. Because it's easy for us to sit in our rooms, AC, internet, lights and everything, and then argue the good and what capitalism has done. But we should also mindfully think about those guys that are sleeping under the bridge tonight.
Yeah.
I think that is where.
Yeah, Louis, great point you have there, honestly. But I think I think I'm going to end this talk show with asking ourselves two questions.
Okay.
And one question, right? What system, in the current Nigeria environment, Nigeria is not that bad.
Yeah.
We are turning 16. In the current Nigerian environment, right?
Yeah.
what system? I'm not going to ask you whether capitalism or socialism, but what system, even if it's the mix of the two, but what value system do you think we should adopt to take this country to where it is to, something else? So you go first.
Yeah, so I usually, for whenever I'm having this discussion with anyone about Nigeria, the political landscape, the economy, and so on, I state one thing really clearly that every Nigerian needs to understand. Those in power, they are operating under the theory of anyhowness, yeah? Like we can see, scarcity had been removed, subsidy was removed, and APC, they had their say, and now the same government that opposed that is taking it off again. So to my very point, I would honestly say I don't have an answer to that, because anytime I analyze the issues Nigeria faces, I see an underlying issue every single time. And so I think, first of all, I don't want to sound like an extremist, but the country needs to be stripped bare first, yeah, and then reconstructed.
Yeah.
And once that happens, then we can start discussing. And like I would say, we don't have to choose pure capitalist or pure socialist. We can land in the middle. Yeah. We can give, because obviously what happens in capitalism is that it helps the country grow really fast. Yeah. We can explore the capitalist option while still emulating the socialist system, because we have enough resources to cater for the needs of everyone. So first of all, we have to BS trip. Oh, yeah, you can land in the middle. You can always land in the middle. You have to BS trip the country first, rebuild the whole country before we can discuss of any other system. So that's my point.
Thank you very much, Louis. I think I share the same point with you, but what I would say, and I will say this with all forms of empathy and sympathy.
Yeah.
I feel Nigeria is the, if you look at the industries in this country controlled by the government, they're hopeless. I mean, if you think about it, they're hopeless. If you look at every single industry in Nigeria that is controlled by a private, that is spearheaded by private people, you see the growth. Look at the music industry. Look at the bank. Nigeria has one of the strongest banking industry in Africa.
Sure.
Private companies, private banking.
Okay.
Right? If you look at the entire oil companies, you cannot compare NNPC to any of them. You cannot compare NNPC to Chevron. You can't compare it to Shell. You can't compare it to Wando. You can't compare it to any of those things. You can't, because there's different. I mean, they're operating on a different scale. Yes, NNPC controls their whole regulations. And if you look at schools in the country, the best private schools in this country, I mean, one of the best, you see private institutions, even down to secondary school, let's not even go to universities, right? If you look at our airports, federal government, nothing.
Yeah.
Railway station they have been trying to build, federal government, nothing. So in my opinion, it may not be capitalism.
Yeah.
It is, for me, it is privatization. I mean, I don't know if that is under capitalism, but I know it sounds like under capitalism, but I feel every single industry in this country should be privatized. All the government should do is regulate. That is how I see it.
When I had that same idea earlier, till I saw what was happening with PHCN, and I saw
PHCN,
and it was
political. I mean, they just politicized it. See, let me tell you this: the government handing over in industries to a privatized society, to privatize members. Nigerian government never gives people who are maverick and are independent of policies. That is the problem. That is the major problem. So even if you want to go to privatization, the government will go and give you want to go and give this to people who they can have political influence on. No, in the UK, I think you should know this, a Nigerian guy, Ogunsele or something. I mean, I've had something Ogunsele. A Yoruba guy, he owns he owns two airports. Rather, he runs two airports in the UK. He runs two airports. That one of those airports made for the £2 million when since he took over from it. Do you get? And this same guy came to, for example, in the refinery in PH, there is there doing literally nothing. When Obasanjo sold the refinery to Dangote and Otedola for $400 million, you're like, no, federal act, is it federal access, national access, that they cannot sell it to private individuals, that it is not good, that it is not that, that it's okay. Obasanjo didn't listen to them, definitely. Radwa came into power, I reencountered it, my dear. That refinery is still there, and nothing has, no oil has come out from it. And now this man had to move to Lagos, and he's spending so much money in Lagos, being his own refinery. So the question we need to ask ourselves is privatization. For me, it is privatization. In my own regard, it is privatization. So like I said, we are all going to agree to disagree. So thank you all for being here. Louis, you have one last thing before we wrap this up.
No, I think I said my last words before, just for us to reflect and so on. And thank you for having me on your show. I think I enjoyed my time here. It was civil.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here and staying to the very end. And this podcast is recorded. This talk show is recorded and we'll play on the podcast, hopefully on Monday or Tuesday. You check our link. Reach out to me, a2d.talkshow@outlook.com. And thank you, everyone. Yeah. Have a good night. And for those listening, have a great weekend. And have a good week. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. Bye.